every Friday night after the League of Ireland games, a place for you to come to give your opinion, to vent. And there's a little button down on the left-hand corner where you can say that you want to talk.
Catch League of Ireland Late Night, Friday nights at 10 on Twitter Spaces. Follow at Off the Ball.
Delighted to say that we're joined on the line now by Professor Simon Chadwick, an expert in geopolitics and the economics of sport. Good morning, Simon.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for taking our call. Obviously, in the shadow of events unfolding between Russia and Ukraine, at the minute, we wanted to get you on and get some of your thoughts on that. And we might come back to the tangled web behind how we've got here. But your reaction, first of all, if you don't mind, to the removal of St. Petersburg as the host venue for the Champions League final.
I think that UEFA is in a very difficult position, and it's actually moved swiftly and decisively to address the situation. I'm sure that UEFA will justify this in terms of safety and security, but also upholding a set of values which it believes sport should adhere to. But I think UEFA ultimately really had no choice.
Yeah, so they're doing it for the... They had no choice in terms of the optics of it, really.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the difficulty UEFA is in is UEFA is, has got a Gazprom sponsorship. And for people who don't know, Gazprom is the Russian state-owned gas corporation. And Gazprom and Ukraine and the whole issue of Russian influence over Western Europe has been central to what's now happening in Ukraine. And for UEFA to be associated with such intense geopolitics, I think, was just probably a step too far for UEFA, even though, as I say, Gazprom is a sponsor. You've got to keep in mind that the final in St. Petersburg, obviously Gazprom-sponsored tournament in a Gazprom-owned stadium where a Gazprom-owned team normally plays, and it just didn't look good for UEFA. I think it had to do something.
Gazprom's involvement in football in itself is slightly odd. A natural gas company, when you look at a lot of the shirt sponsorships in global sport, they don't tend to be at that level necessarily. Majority stake owned by the Russian state, first got involved, I think it was Schalke 15 years ago. Would you talk to us a little bit about that, Simon, and why they're involved in football?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you've got to keep in mind that normally if we take the Champions League or the European Championships, for example, we would normally expect what's called a B2C sponsorship, a business-to-consumer sponsorship. So, you know, McDonald's or Coca-Cola or Sony PlayStation, Heineken are the kind of deals that you would normally expect. But Gazprom, but not just with UEFA, but also with Schalke as well, is a very different kind of sponsor because effectively what Gazprom does is it sells gas to governments, and exactly how you do that through a UEFA sponsorship deal is you know, not immediately clear. So I think partly the deal was about Gazprom legitimizing itself. And what I mean by that is, you know, up until Monday, none of us really questioned Gazprom. None of us really asked what Gazprom is, what it does, how it goes about its business. We just accepted it as a Champions League sponsor. And I think that's exactly what Gazprom wanted to do. It wanted to legitimize the activities in which it was engaged. And obviously, what we know those activities were is what's happened this week. But I think the second aspect of this as well is, when a sponsor engages with Schalke or with UEFA or any other property, what they do is they activate a deal. They activate the deal. And what activating the deal means is, for example, using corporate hospitality to entertain important decision makers, potential clients, and so on and so forth. And so I think what Gazprom has also done is to use Champions League games and to use the corporate boxes in places like Old Trafford and, you know, Anfield and many other such places to really engage in what I would call fast track diplomacy, which is to target important decision makers, politicians, influential people, businesses that Gazprom really needed to not only sell gas, but I think also further its political agenda. And that's exactly what's happened, you know, not just in the 15 years since it signed with Schalke, but in the near 10 years since it's been with UEFA.
Is there any existing governance to hold deals like that to scrutiny?
There isn't. I think that's a simple thing. Is what tends to happen in football right now is if there's a company that is willing to pay, then football typically will accept that money. And you know, we're not just talking about Gazprom here. We're talking about gambling sponsorships and many other forms of sponsorship. And so I think one of the lessons that European football has got to learn from all of this is that if you take someone's money, sometimes baggage comes with that. And so the way in which we engage in due diligence and risk assessment has got to change. And I've been monitoring Gazprom now for the best part of 15 years. And it was very clear what Gazprom was and what it was trying to do. You know, Gazprom was a hugely controversial organization, particularly in places not just like Ukraine, but also in places like Poland. There have been issues in Serbia. Clearly, the connection to Germany is really contentious. And yet it appears that nobody within the international football community, including UEFA, really questioned that sufficiently enough. And this is where, you know, where we now are. You know, I've said earlier in the week in another interview that I gave, it's almost as though European football has been sleepwalking into this situation when, you know, for some of us, we spotted this 15 years ago and it's just been simmering since then.
What adds a whole other level of intrigue to this is not necessarily just on the surface level you've got UEFA greed, which is the obvious answer to why they've turned a blind eye to this, but also kind of how this happened. And when you look at someone like Alexander Zhukov, who is the chief executive of Gazprom Neft, who actually has a seat on the UEFA's executive committee, that is a hugely problematic thing, right?
I think you've raised a really great point and a really important point, because Alexander Zhukov is pivotal in all of this. So Zhukov was in charge at Zenit St. Petersburg. He is now the head of the Russian Football Union, the Russian Football Association. He's also the head of Gazprom. But by virtue of his role with the Russian Football Union, he's managed to get himself onto the UEFA Executive Council. So, you know, what's, you know, kind of almost perverse about all of this is that UEFA has been forced to make decisions about Russia and about Gazprom and about other related issues in meetings where Zhukov, who effectively is one of Putin's, you know, sidekicks, he's one of his right-hand men, certainly in football, has been present in those meetings. And I think the whole governance of, not just of sponsorship deals, but I think the whole governance of UEFA itself as an organization has really been challenged and, dare one say, even compromised by what has happened this week. But as I say, you know, this didn't just sneak up on us. You know, this was there all along. It's been there for the last 10 years within UEFA. And really nobody, including people outside UEFA, not just people inside UEFA, you know, including people outside UEFA, have not challenged this, have not questioned this. And I think one of the things we've got to learn moving forward from here is the way in which not just sponsorship deals, but TV deals, commercial deals, where matches are hosted, where finals are staged, we have to start taking these things much more seriously and asking not just economic and commercial questions, but political questions, sociocultural questions. And we've got to be a lot more savvy and improve the standard of governance that is displayed within football.
You mentioned about the sleepwalking aspect to it. It's probably more likely, I guess, that everybody was fully aware as to what was going on here, but they chose to take that sort of blinkered view. Is this a moment now for introspection for football, particularly at this minute?
The moment was probably 20 years ago, or nearly 20 years ago, when Roman Abramovich took over Chelsea. And again, Abramovich is part of this, because Abramovich, at the time he bought Chelsea, was the owner of a Russian gas corporation called Sibneft. And Abramovich sold Sibneft to the Russian state, and that ultimately became, you know, what is essentially now Gazprom. And so, you know, we've had lots and lots and lots of opportunities. You know, what's happened this week? What happened with Abramovich when Russia invaded Crimea? And yet we've not really asked questions and we've not really reflected. And I think, you know, these are just words. And, you know, now is a moment for reflection. Well, yeah, okay, we could have said that, you know, 10, 15, 20 times over the last 20 years and we've not done it. And so, you know, if we're going to say it, now's a moment for reflection, we've got to mean it. We've actually got to do it. Mm. And that's got to take a political, that needs a political will. It needs an appetite to do it. And then obviously it's not just talk about it, actually do it.
You tweeted a link last night, Simon, to an article about Manchester United's sponsorship deal with Aeroflot, a Russian state-owned airline. And why there isn't more due diligence around stuff like that, for example. It feels like it's a case of, for a lot of these clubs or associations, to, you know, get the money in and then sort of keep the head down and hope that there's not too much of a stir about it. In the context of what you've just said, how do you see relationships like that, for example? Because the Gazprom one is obviously a very significant one that we will talk about, but there are several others. How do you see those sort of relationships developing from here?
And I think it would be very, very easy just to sit here and lay the blame at the door of UEFA, lay the blame at the door of Manchester United and other such organisations. But you've got to keep in mind that these organisations, particularly clubs, They do operate in a high cost environment. You know, so players earn huge amounts of money. The transfer fees are massive, and so they've got to cover their costs. You know, if they don't generate revenues to cover the costs of clubs, clubs go out of business. And so, you know, it is almost as though we all need to have this conversation about a new deal for football. And you know, instead of being seduced by big name players on big salaries and big transfer fees, and talking about, you know, we're the best league in the world. There's a time. Now is the time, as you say. It's a moment to reflect and to think. Well, you know, somehow we've been complicit in this for the last 30 years. You know, we've let this happen, and here we are now. And football is a part of something much bigger than perhaps we realised when we used to talk about such things. Mm. But I think. You know, absolutely, in this dash for revenue, you know, there are good ways to make money and there are bad ways to make money. And as I say, through for example, gambling sponsorships or associations with, you know, the Russian state, you know, through associations with people who are perhaps involved in activities that we don't necessarily like or agree with. You know, we've got to take action. We can't just talk about it. And so moving forward from here, I think that the Aeroflot Manchester United case demonstrates, and for that matter, the Gazprom UEFA case, you know, does reveal that increasingly people expect sponsorship deals to at least adhere to some basic principles of morality and have some underpinning values attached to them. You know, if we think about, you know, the likes of Naomi Osaka or Colin Kaepernick or Lewis Hamilton, you know, we know there is a wind of change blowing through commercial relationships. And I think what we now realize is it can't just be around, you know, other social causes such as ethnicity and racism. You know, it's also got to extend to ideological position and political values. And I think this whole episode reveals that to us. And so sponsorship has to change. Commercial relationships have to change. And ultimately, it could be that we've just got to say, well, hey, you know, we can't take this money from Russia. We can't take this money from Saudi Arabia. We can't take this money from, you know, wherever it comes from. So, you know, there are some harsh realities here for football to deal with. And you know, I go back to your point about, is it a moment to reflect? Absolutely it is. And we can't just talk about it. We've got to decide what we do moving forward from here.
Like the thing about that is that in the Newcastle situation, the money from Saudi Arabia has been accepted. And it seems that the uproar about that wasn't necessarily going to lead to change or to any sort of prevention of that takeover of Newcastle United. Whereas this seems different. This seems as if change might actually happen or things might actually stop. For example, the behaviour of putting the Champions League final in St. Petersburg is going to be reversed. That is an actual change as a result of what's happening. So all of a sudden, is this the line in the sand? You know, one country invades another country relatively close to the Western world, a country that has done nothing wrong. And that is the line in the sand, whereas Saudi Arabia is on the right line in that right side of that line. Is that what we're saying here? Because it does seem that nothing has actually changed materially as a result of Saudi Arabia.
Well, I'll say two things. I mean, firstly, Saudi Arabia was involved in a war when it was given permission to buy Newcastle United. Saudi Arabia is involved in a war in Yemen. The people of Yemen did nothing. You know, the people of Yemen didn't invade Saudi Arabia. You know, Saudi Arabia is involved in a really long and bloody war in Yemen. Now, that's a complicated situation. You know, I don't want to generalize or oversimplify, but nevertheless, you know, reference to that war was not made when an application by the Saudi Arabian state was made to the Premier League to buy Newcastle United. And you know, that didn't form part of the owners and directors test decision that was implemented or applied in the case of Saudi Arabia buying Newcastle. So there is a direct comparison. You know, within the last 6 months, we've already made the same mistake with Saudi Arabia and Newcastle United. We didn't question the war part. But I think moving on from that to the current situation, you know, we perhaps shouldn't, you know, become too optimistic and too you know, hopeful that things are going to dramatically change anytime soon. As the pandemic has shown to us, it's actually very easy to move a game. The Champions League for the last two seasons has moved, and I think UEFA probably feels fairly safe, fairly confident in moving games now because they know it can be done at relatively short notice. The acid test for UEFA and the acid test for football is, will UEFA terminate their sponsorship deals with Gazprom? Because that's far less easy. That's far more challenging to accomplish. And I think for me, the acid test is not just moving a single game. The acid test is, you know, what about those deals with Gazprom? keeping in mind they're not just the Champions League, it's also European Championship and Nations League as well. That's the first thing. And the other thing is on an ongoing basis, now, how will UEFA engage with the Russian Football Union and engage with the Russian national team moving forward from here? So, you know, there's still the substantive, the fundamental issues are still there. You know, good start, UEFA, but let's see more.
And there's a bit of strength in numbers as well with regards to their response over the last 24 hours. Everybody else is doing it, so it's safe enough for us to take something away from the Russians. So I guess the acid test will be what happens next when there is literally money on the line with regards to their Gazprom sponsorship. In many ways, if this situation deteriorates and gets more grim by the day, which it is likely to do in a similarly grim way, that would make UEFA's decision even easier. It would be a situation where they just cannot continue with Gazprom.
Yeah, and I think when you said there's literally money on the line, you know, keep that phrase in mind as we go through the next week, month, 6 months. So that's one thing. I think the other thing as well is you've got to keep in mind two things. The first one is the Russian Football Union is part of UEFA. There are 55 member associations, including Ireland, England, France, and others. You know, but so is Russia. So, you know, UEFA has a responsibility to the Russian Football Union as much as it does to Ireland, to England, and others. So, you know, that's a particularly difficult and complex challenge, I think, for UEFA to deal with. But I think the other thing I would say as well, you mentioned Alexander Dukov. So there's pressure coming from Russia inside UEFA, but you also have to keep in mind there's going to be pressure coming on UEFA from outside the organization, you know, so from the United States, from the British government, from the French government. And so, you know, this is a governing body. You know, this organization, you know, sets up competitions and, you know, promotes grassroots development of football and, you know, kind of funds women's football. It's not the United Nations. It's not a geopolitical organization. And so I think, you know, UEFA does need to be supported. It does need to be helped. It does need to be guided to ensure that it makes the best possible decisions. Number one for football, but I think beyond that, obviously, to ensure that football is delivered in a safe and secure way, but in a way that doesn't perpetuate or support or condone violence of any particular nature.
Could you say that they have made themselves a geopolitical entity as a result of getting into bed with a company like Gazprom?
100%. I mean, what's really interesting is the IOC has over the last 12 months, we've had Thomas Bach, the president of the IOC, telling us that the Olympic movement, the Olympic Games, is not a political organization. And yet, a lot of what he's done over the last 12 months has been incredibly political and geopolitical. And so I think it is almost unavoidable at this particular moment in time for a sports organization, you know, whether it's a governing body like UEFA or a club like Manchester United or even a sponsor, you know, thinking about sponsors like, you know, McDonald's or Coca-Cola, it's almost impossible to be neutral and non-political. And so I think what this does call for organizations in football to think about and really establish in their minds is, you know, who are we, what do we do, and what values do we embody? And you know, they shouldn't necessarily be thinking about Ukraine, or they shouldn't necessarily be thinking about, you know, issues of racism or whatever else it might be. It's fundamentally, what do we stand for? And then you make decisions in the context of what you stand for. And I think that's where the UEFA Champions League decision comes from, because, you know, UEFA does try to adhere to the IOC, to the Olympic Charter, and uphold certain basic principles and values. And so I think In this context, that's one of the positives that has come out of this, is UEFA said, you know, we do have a set of values, and we're going to adhere to those values, and we're going to operate and make decisions on that basis. So, you know, good start, UEFA, but let's look at those commercial deals, and as we move forward from here, you begin to think about, well, you know, is there a way of terminating those Gazprom deals? And if there isn't, you know, next time when the rights negotiations come round, you know, are you going to exclude Gazprom from bidding for the right to bid for those rights?
The removal of the Champions League final, Schalke have actually taken the shirt sponsorship off. I don't know if the action delves any deeper than that, but you would expect that a lot of other brands, as you've just been indicating, would be left with no choice but to do that exact same thing. Have you any sense of, Putin has been talking about the Iron Curtain now as well, but have you any sense about how, having spent years and millions and tens of millions to build up that soft power base, how all that plays out in the Kremlin?
You've got to keep in mind that in the great scheme of things, when you've got a Russian president who's you know, kind of waving the threat of nuclear weapons in front of everyone. Sports sponsorship really is you know, it kind of disappears into the background, and it is far less important than perhaps we're making it out to be. But I think certainly one of the things that Putin and the Kremlin has done is to try and shape the world's view of Russia. And I think if you go back to 2016 in Marseille, you know, obviously we suddenly had this view of Russia as, you know, basically being this thuggish bully that was walking around Marseille beating up football fans. And obviously there were stories that Russian secret agents were part of the Russian hooligan gangs that were there at the time. And so this got us to 2018. And I think about England, there were actually more Chinese football fans in Russia in 2018 than there were England fans, because I think England fans were genuinely afraid that if they went to Russia, they would get beaten up. They were, you know, they would possibly even worse. And when people actually went to Russia, they came back and they were saying, what a great country, what a great atmosphere, what a great welcome. You know, we're really safe, no problems at all. And so, you know, I think that demonstrates how Russia and how Putin has used sport to manipulate and to shape people's perceptions of Russia. And up to this point, that has served its purpose. But I think moving forward from here, obviously the cat's out of the bag. You know, we know still that kind of brutish face that we saw in Marseille in 2016 during the European Championships, you know, that is how Putin wants Russia to exert its influence now. And so I think, you know, if we are going to see Putin and the Kremlin engaging with sport from here, then, you know, it's going to be a very, very different incarnation moving forward than it has been over the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years.
Will the Abramovich-Chelsea relationship survive all this?
It has so far, and it seems to be that there's no political appetite to deal with Putin. The alarm bells have been ringing for quite some time. We know that Theresa May's government, for instance, denied Abramovich a visa to enter Britain. So, you know, again, there are some really, really difficult, tough questions for the British government to ask, for British football to ask, for the Premier League to ask, for Chelsea fans to ask. You know, I go back to the earlier point that I made is that Abramovich will have used money that he made from selling Sibneft to Gazprom to help him buy Chelsea. And I'm often dismayed by football fans saying, Premier League, best league in the world. And it's almost like a house built on sand. And what's now happening is the sand is shifting and the house will start to crumble. But having said all of that, you know, as we know, there tends to be this kind of myopia or this reluctance to even contemplate bad things when it comes to the Premier League, because of course it's the best league in the world. But, you know, we've got Abramovich, someone who's associated with Vladimir Putin at Chelsea. You know, we've got Saudi Arabia at Newcastle United. Saudi Arabia is involved in a war. You know, we've got numerous others with if not dubious track records, then certainly, you know, with associations with issues, with organizations, with causes, with problems that really, you know, we don't really want these people involved in running football clubs, but they're there. They are there. And I think if the British government, if the Premier League was to start with Abramovich, you know, it's a bit like once you start cutting the branches of a tree, you know, you just very suddenly find yourself halfway down the trunk and having to cut the whole tree down. And so it's very difficult territory for the government and very difficult territory for the Premier League to go into, because once you start dealing with one case, then a whole stream of other cases will start to unfold.
Yeah. Professor Simon Chadwick, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.